I'm Felina Jean, and this is Black Broads Abroad. I'm an international woman of leisure who said peace out to the United States in 2011, and I have not looked back except at this ass, honey. Since then, I've lived on four continents with travel to over 40 countries. Along my journey, I've come to know some very compelling Black women from all over the world who also said fuck you to their comfort zones. I created this podcast to inspire Black women in the diaspora to take risks and live their very best lives. Jules Chambers is the host of All Things Iceland podcast, an engineer by training who has made the pivot as a career digital strategist. Her passion lies in being able to engage, inspire, and infuse innovation into her work by utilizing her analytical mind, organizational skills, and innate ability to connect with people. Over the years, she has been fortunate to create, implement, and measure creative digital strategies in various industries. Regardless of the industry, her objective has remained the same: link the right people to the right resources to relieve their pain points. Her love of Iceland and curiosity about the country inspired her to create the All Things Iceland podcast. Along with interviewing Icelanders and expats, she shares travel advice and fascinating information about Icelandic history, culture, nature, and language. Welcome, Jules.
Thank you so much for having me.
I so appreciate you. So I'll give a little backstory to how we kind of like made an e-connection within the last week. I was listening to another one of my favorite travel podcasts, Flourish in the Foreign, and you were a guest on Christy's show, and I've actually have interviewed with Christy as well, and so there's just similar synergies, and I was like, whoa, a Black girl in Iceland? Let me reach out. So thank you for your time today.
Yeah, my pleasure. And thank you so much for inviting me. I'm excited to share my story with your listeners.
So, okay, my first question is, where are you from originally? And how did your early life experience inform your travels?
I'm originally born and raised in Brooklyn, specifically in Bushwick in New York City.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so definitely an urban big city kid.
Big time. Bushwick, yeah. Okay, girl.
I was born in the 80s as well. So like this was a really...
Oh, wow. This is a lot really, of context.
Yes, okay. Exactly. Rough time to be in Bushwick. And sometimes I think back to like, what were my parents thinking? Like, this place was dangerous. But and what's so funny is that my mom is originally from Rochester, New York, which is so different. Are you familiar with there?
I actually used to work for University of Rochester.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So that back in the day when she was growing up there, it was a really affluent city and Kodak and Xerox and all that. So I think the mesh of my parents, my dad growing up in Bed-Stuy and my mom coming from Rochester, and they met in Rochester but eventually moved to New York City. That having this mix of individuals helping to, you know, grow me and my sister, I think it ended up being a great combination because we had this worldly view in a way. Like my mom has always been this person, and she grew up this way with her parents too, that nothing is really off limits to you, right? If you really are interested in something, such as going to different museums, even if there are neighborhoods that are not familiar to you, go to them, right? Like what is stopping you then? Just your imagination about what could be rather than your experience once you go into it.
So, wow.
And in that, though, my mom was a big powerhouse in terms of influence on me. So my dad worked a lot and he was definitely an amazing individual in terms of that. But the person who shaped me, I think for sure, has to do with my mother having an after-school program and a summer camp during the summer for the kids in Bushwick. And she would take us on trips. Yeah, it's just like, when I think back to it, I'm like, she learned to write grants and got funding from the government to run these programs and to feed the kids in a neighborhood. And many of these kids' parents were on drugs. So, you know, they would come to the center and that would be like their safe space. And we didn't just stay in Bushwick. So in the summertime, we went on trips Monday to Thursday to different parts of the city. And on Friday was arts and crafts. So, you know, they would go to Brighton Beach. We would go to the Museum of Science. We, you know, Sony had this museum at the time. I don't know if they still have it in Manhattan. Central Park, the lighting of the Christmas tree in the wintertime. You know, it's just like all these experiences that these kids might not have assumed that they were worthy of just being and experiencing. And I got to, you know, be along with them. So essentially my mom was like a lot of other people's moms, which is annoying at times. but this kind of shaped my idea of the world, in that even as a teenager, I never felt that connected to the United States. And I'm not saying
that's interesting.
Yeah, I'm not saying that, like, I say I'm from the U.S. I always say I'm from New York City. Like, I always make that distinction.
Well, y'all are your own planet, so
it's not true.
Far-fetched.
Yeah, we have a lot going on there. So. But in essence, though, I literally remember sitting in a geography class and thinking that I needed to move somewhere else. And I didn't have like a plan to do this, but it just stuck out of my mind, kind of learning about the U.S. And we weren't learning in the way that a lot of kids are learning now about the real history of the U.S. I mean, we were getting the very whitewashed version. But even still, there was just instinctually something in me that was like, I really need to go and like experience the world. I'm not so sure.
Now, did you attend public schools in Bushwick growing up?
I attended private school. So we went to Catholic school.
Oh, we have such a similar background.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, I'm from South Central, but I attended, like, private Catholic schools and, like, went to school in the suburbs. So you had that juxtaposition of experiences where that's very important, I think. I think that's so important, but I didn't mean to cut you off. Continue. Okay.
And probably similar to your experience, the teachers were white in those schools.
Right.
So you're also, you know, very much associated with white people as for your education, which is another like interesting thing and parallel, especially with Catholicism. And I'm not Catholic either. So.
Me either.
there's a lot, I think, that, and I'm just only probably the last 5 or 10 years of my life getting rid of Catholic guilt, which is hilarious.
I think it's made a resurgence, like where I'm hitting 40. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're such a prude. Is this like that, you know, the Catholic training?
It runs deep. They are good at what they're doing, that's for sure. And then also, I went to private school from the age of 5 until 18, meaning like Catholic school.
Oh, okay.
And then to a private university. And so my whole life was, in a way, there was, I wouldn't say sheltering, but there was like a bubble that we were living in. Because public school is very different, as you know, and like in many urban environments, and especially in New York City, it just varied where you lived, how bad it could be. And in Bushwick, my sister went to public school, I think, for 1 or 2 years, and she is a very different person than me. I mean, we're different anyway, but she's way more tougher, and she kind of has this more like edge to her a bit. And I think that brought out some of that came out and was developed in public school, because she had to fight sometimes. That she said the kids were like throwing teachers and stuff, though. Yeah. It was
I got kicked out. I was like one of those spiders. I definitely got kicked out of public school. So you also went to private school for university, and what did you study at university?
Yeah, I went to the school called Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. Yeah, it was just, I don't know, one of those things where I used to watch a lot of science programs. My dad was a science teacher, so I was just a big nerd as a kid. And I would often, you know, think about like, oh, what I want to do. And my biggest thing was, I really want to be a, you know, some type of scientist who changes the world. And biomedical engineering sounded like a good idea. So I went with it, and I have a degree in that. But I realized probably like late junior, early senior year, that it doesn't feel that good to me. Like what I was majoring in was in materials, and I spent a lot of time in the lab. And I was just like, I feel like I'm a people person. I don't know how that translates and what I'm gonna do with it. But after school, I just decided to take a break. And I also had hip surgery. So that gave me some time to rest and think about things. And I ended up just kind of transitioning into working in nonprofit at one point. So that was so interesting too. Like my journey to working in digital marketing is so far from where I began in college.
So in college, did you participate in any study abroad programs or like during your sabbatical, if you will, the time that you took off after college, did you do any traveling?
No. So when I had hip surgery, they didn't replace the hip, but they did a little bit of microfracture, and that helps to encourage some repair cartilage in your joint. So that meant that I couldn't use that leg. I couldn't put any pressure on that leg for a month. So after not using it for a month, it was like going through like rehab and all the other stuff just to get some function back in the muscle. So it wasn't very much, you know, like I'm going to go and travel somewhere. You know, it was more like just
right.
During college, I wanted to go to a program in Egypt. I remember this. And at one point, I actually studied Arabic for 2 semesters in school, not at RPI, but like the local community college had Arabic. So I would like, after classes at RPI, I would go over there. And I have no idea why I was like obsessed at one point with the Middle East. But I eventually was like, I'm not so sure if I should go. You know, like I started getting like cold feet. Because that was what, 2008, I want to say, 2007, maybe. So yeah, it was kind of like, I'm not sure if this is a good time to do this. And so I pulled out of it and then graduated and just kind of started working in New York City after I had taken my time off.
Okay, so fast forward a little bit. How did you come to move to Iceland and how long have you been living there now?
So my husband is Icelandic and it's so funny that I met him when we were both at university, not the same university. He still lives in Iceland and I lived in Troy, New York. And we have a mutual Icelandic friend who was going to the same university as me. So I met him 13 years ago, but we didn't get together until 7 years ago. So that's another thing that's really interesting. We just happened to meet and then kept in contact through Facebook. And then we realized at one point that we were both single and we're like, hey, why don't we meet up and just have a good time? And once we met up, it just clicked instantly. It just felt like we were in a relationship. It was pretty amazing how simple it was. It just felt like, how were we missing this before? But he moved to Iceland first. So he was living in the US at one point for 8 years. He was pursuing his PhD in psychology and decided to finish his dissertation in Iceland because he was planning to move back anyway. And I knew that when we got together, like that he was very like blunt with me that this was something he was going to do. And I was like, that's great. I'll move to Iceland. Like, not knowing anything, just blindly being like, cool, right? And it's like, and I remember telling him, I always wanted to move out of the country. And he's like, good. So like, this is working out.
So but what year did you move there?
I moved in 2016.
2006. So it's been 4 years or so.
Yeah.
And what has been your reception there as a Black woman? And what, I mean, I don't have a lot of knowledge of Iceland, but I imagine it's a homogeneous society. So what has been your experience as a Black woman in terms of how people have received you?
Overall, my experience has been really good. I've not experienced any outright racism, like nothing direct. There have been, and Icelandic people are known for staring. So that's off-putting if you're not used to it. Because of course you think if someone stares at you and they're not normally smiling, right? So you're getting this like, I have to see you. It's just more like curious, but their faces look like, with their resting face looks kind of angry. And so I, you know, people are staring and especially not in downtown Reykjavik. So a lot of people are worried about this whenever they contact me. They're like, oh, you know, they're going to be staring at me. And I'm like, in downtown Reykjavik and in many of the places where they're used to tourists, it's not the same as when you're in like a smaller, like a suburb and you're just walking down the street and that normally in their neighborhood, they don't see people like this because this is not a touristy area. So they stare more. And when you're looking different than the ordinary or someone they don't know, they are staring like, do I know? You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like they're trying to figure something out. So, yeah, overall, though, like I mentioned, like, Gunnar's friends, his family, that was one of the reasons I felt so comfortable living here, is that his family has been amazing. I mean, they're my family now, too, of course. But before before we were married, it was like, I feel like I belong here. I feel like this is a warm reception, and it still has been that way. Some of my best friends here are, like, his sister, my sister-in-law, I say sister-in-law, but it's really his brother's wife, my husband's brother's wife, so my brother-in-law's wife, yeah. And, like, people like this, you know, who are core parts of the family, and my mother-in-law is amazing. Like, she gives the best hugs. Unfortunately, we can't hug her now because of COVID, and she has that autoimmune disease, but yeah. Yeah, so it's really, that part's really sucking a lot, but just in terms of how I felt, I don't know. I just knew that it made sense for me to live here. I can't speak for everybody. I've heard stories from different people, and yeah, it can kind of vary too on if you want to be here. You know, like, Iceland isn't for everybody, and sometimes people come for different reasons.
Right.
So that can make a difference too. You know.
How was what was your parents or your family and friends' reaction to moving from New York to Iceland?
Yeah, my mom and my grandmother were not excited because they were just like, are they going to be nice to you? Are they going to be racist towards you? You know, like, they don't know anything about this country. They just know it's a lot of white people, and white people historically for them have been very violent, have been scary, have been, you know, individuals that you can be cordial with, but you just kind of never know what can happen. And my grandmother grew up in the north in Rochester, even though she outside of Rochester on a farm area, and she experienced a lot of things. Like, she told me stories about how she used to walk down the street with rocks in her pocket as a young girl, so just in case, like, some white guys are trying to harass her, that she could throw the rocks at them and hopefully that gives her enough time to run away or something, you know. And it was just like, god, it was like, this is terrible. And my mom definitely experienced blatant racism in Rochester. So for them, a lot of the times it was like, you know, you just need to watch out for yourself. And they were just afraid for that. But once they came to visit, a lot changed, meaning like their impression of the country. First of all, it's a really beautiful country, so that helped. But also similarly, like, Gunnar's family and the people that they were interacting with were so nice. And they were just like, oh, this is great. We're so happy that you're living here. You know, and it was just like, wow.
That's good. I mean, in America, the divided states is like, that's training ground to survive anywhere in terms of, you know, in terms of where racism is involved. So if racism anywhere else is damn near light work. Yeah. So is there a Black community of expats in Iceland? And, like, how did you personally go about forming community there?
Yeah. There is a Facebook group. So this is really another thing about Iceland. It's so fascinating. They have Facebook groups for everything. This is how, like, more than 90% of the country is on Facebook. And they use it a lot. So one year, I think maybe it was a year after I came here, this guy, Derek Allen, created a Black People of Iceland group for English speakers, because there exists one for Icelandic speakers, but if you haven't learned the language yet, you feel left out. So in this group, we've been meaning to have meetups. It just hasn't really happened, to be honest, which is kind of messed up. But I feel really fortunate that recently at the George Floyd gathering, march, and support for Black Lives Matter meeting in Reykjavik, where, like, close to 4,000 people came out. It was amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, for this small of a country to have that big it was really amazing. And there were a bunch of people of color, Black people and everything, and I was like, who are these people? I have never seen this people in my life. And he just I ended up going to a restaurant with a bunch of women who were at that meeting, and it was amazing. And we've been going out and doing things after that. So this has been kind of opening my eyes a little bit. And I'm also then hearing different stories. I mean, there are people who have been here for 20 years. There are people who have been here, you know, less than me. It's kind of just varied and in different circumstances, you know, some with children. Mm-hmm. And the ones with children, that's always the most interesting to me to hear about. It's that integration into the society and how that's been for them. And as individuals too, I mean, if you've been in the country, say for 20 years, and you don't feel like you belong here, that's a problem, in my opinion, right? Because it's like, that would be messed up. And
that's a long time to be a place and not feel. So like where, I live in Johannesburg now. I previously lived in Qatar and Korea and Brazil before that. And I know that like certain places attract expats because, you know, there might be a specific industry and they were recruited. Like, what are expats doing in Iceland? Are they digital nomads? Were they recruited by like multinational companies? Like, what's the demographic makeup?
So if you're part of the European Union or the Schengen area in Europe, you can come and live and work in Iceland without a visa, without having to worry about anything.
Oh, okay.
If you're outside of that, like in the United States or most other countries outside of Europe, you have to jump through some serious hoops. You have to either be with a person that is legally allowed to be here, like work and be here, meaning like marry or have a cohabitation status. The wording they use is so weird. Or if you do get a job, it has to be, they make it that outside of the EU or the Schengen area, that there has to be, have been like no one else they could have hired for this job, you know, so a specialty.
Oh, and it's like a specialized skill set.
Yes, exactly. So a lot of the technology that happens quite a bit, especially computer programming, and when the tourism industry was going strong here, and that's actually how I found a job before I came here, was in digital marketing, because that's what I was doing in New York City. And in tourism, it's like everybody was like neck and neck, you know, fighting for tourists that are coming here. So being able to help distinguish a company in the digital marketing space was a really big, and I think it will come back to be really important, but at the time, last few years, it has been an industry that was growing. And I was seeing a lot more foreigners go into that. And yeah, so, I mean, and I then, after leaving a travel agency, I worked at a advertising agency, which again is another place where if you have the skill set technology-wise or strategy, marketing, things like that, they're definitely looking for that. In Iceland, they're just not enough people for the specialties that they need. And a lot of the times you can find them in places like the US where we're way more advanced than Iceland when it comes to digital marketing. But it can technically be a little expensive for companies to sponsor a person, but if they feel like it's worth it, they will do it.
So most of the expats there come from the Shenzhen area then, and we should probably qualify with that. To my understanding, Shenzhen area is like the countries that comprise the European Union. I think there's like 26 of them. Is that correct?
Yeah, and then there's some outside of the European Union, like just a few. But the largest population of immigrants here are Polish people.
And they really?
Yeah, and it's so interesting because you don't really hear about that.
They're always the butt of European jokes.
Yeah, and they get that here too. That's what surprised me, because I was like, is it going to be that Black people are on the low totem pole here? And it's like, no, it's Polish people.
The actually. Polish. Yeah, it's always a joke about like, so, you know, a Brit, a German, and a Polish walk into a bar. They get a bad rap.
They do. It's like, terrible.
They're like the niggas of Europe.
Pretty much. Yeah. And I was so surprised here at like some of the prejudice I heard and like, yeah. So it's been one of those like adjustments to realizing how much it doesn't really matter where you are. People are always trying to figure out a way to put you down.
Right.
We're just trying to find a group, you know, to put down. So
I have a beauty question. Like, where do you get your hair done? Because my theory is it don't matter where in the world you go, you can always find a Nigerian lady to braid your hair. It don't matter where. So what is, like, how do you, what do you do to, because I've noticed in one of your pictures, like, you have braids.
Yeah.
You doing your own hair.
Now.
You have what?
My hair is locked now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I used to, I've done my own hair for the last more than a decade, now that I think about it.
Okay.
I've had some terrible experiences at beauty salons, so I was just not a fan. And it's just been, also locking my hair, I think, was just the smartest move for me, because I'm not that invested in doing my hair every week or every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So I was just like, nah, this is not working out for me.
Okay. So yeah, you know, okay, you're not feeling those pain points, at least.
But when I would get my products from the US. When I go on a trip, I would get enough stuff to last me at least until my next trip or a year.
Yeah, that seems par for the course for a lot of us expats. We just stock up on, that's mm-hmm. one of the great things about being in Africa now, especially South Africa,
which
I get in trouble for calling it Diet Africa. It's offensive to South Africa. No. I don't mean it that way, but yeah, it's ultra modern. Like, it's, you know, the infrastructure is to be rivaled by like any Western country.
Yeah.
So we have all of those amenities and stuff, beauty amenities and creature comforts here. So, okay, what is something that would surprise us about life in Iceland? Or even a tidbit, like some of the topics that you even discuss on your podcast, like, it's not necessarily a destination that people think, oh, I'm gonna move to Iceland.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of things. I'm vegan, for instance, and most people associate Iceland with meat eating because that is a big part of their history and food culture, but it's very vegan friendly.
It's like, that's good to know.
Yeah, and right now I'm in Ísafjörður, which is in the West Fjords, which is like way off in the countryside. And there are plenty of vegan options, like of all types of things you can think of. And it always surprises me that this is available. I think one thing that surprised me for sure about life here is that people still leave their babies outside to take naps. And
they do that in Norway too.
Yes, it's a Nordic thing. And I was just like, you know, it's kind of freaking me out a little bit. And so those, like, I'm trying to think of what else would be. I mean, there's a lot of surprising kind of strange things. Like, the cops do not carry guns here. And even.
Really?
Yeah. And even though a lot of people have guns, they own guns, there's basically no gun violence in Iceland.
Oh, most people own like guns to hunt with, or like.
Yeah. It's a hunting culture around guns. Right. But it's not meant to protect yourself. That is not, in fact, it's not even a right to own a gun. It is an earned privilege. You have to go through a course. You have to get people to recommend you. You have to pass a test. You have to, like, you know, you have to do a lot. You have to go through a physical and mental examination. There's a lot in order just to own a gun. So you really, and you have to store it in a gun box or whatever it's called, a locker. So there's like such very strict rules around it that even though there's like 69,000 guns in the country, of a, you know, 360,000, the last shooting was in 2013. And that was when the cops were there's a guy who was actually battling mental illness, was shooting at the cops. They had a SWAT team in. They had to shoot him and they killed him. And there was a mourning across the country that this guy had been killed. And they're like, not in our country. Yeah.
So. There's only 360,000 people that live in the country.
Yep.
Wow, I didn't realize it was so small.
Yeah, it's really
That's
small.
Like, wow, okay, I didn't realize that. And you said 60-something thousand own guns, and compared to, there's more guns than there are people in the United States, and we're at like 350 million or so.
There's like 69,000 registered guns in the country.
Oh, wow, though, that makes you feel safe. So security, Yeah, that's another thing. Like, you know, when you leave the United States, gun violence is not an epidemic in a lot of, I mean, well, in South Africa, gun violence is a thing. Certainly not as much as in the United States. But the safest I ever felt was living, like, in Qatar. And, you know, people thought, like, you know, oh, you're in the Middle East. This place with these rich. No, I'm like, I this is the safest I've ever felt in my life.
Wow.
So what's the, like, if somebody wanted to move there, like, what's the cost of living like in Iceland versus a place like New York?
Okay, well, New York and Iceland are more similar. Not when it comes to food costs. Food cost is astronomical in regards to, so New York is not as expensive food-wise as Iceland.
Okay.
Unless you wanted to just eat really more expensive food in New York. Whereas, like, you have the, you know, you can go to the falafel truck or something and pay $5 and get, like, a ridiculous amount of food. In Iceland, that would be more like $20 or $25, you know?
Okay.
One meal.
So food is higher.
Yeah, food is higher. Cost, if you're living in the Reykjavik area, to rent is really high as well. If you can buy, that's obviously better. I mean, you know, that's, I think, goes without saying in most places. But the thing is that with salaries, normally, at least as I found, because there are a lot of, there are unions here that are really fighting for people to have livable wages, that you end up having, for many, like for myself, I'll just use myself as an example because I don't want to speak for everybody, but the amount that I was making was more than enough for what I needed, meaning like paying for our mortgage, paying for groceries, you know, like this is all these things that I could do and feel very happy and comfortable, even though I was paying a lot of taxes. And I pay a lot of taxes out of my paycheck. Like there's a lot of that money that I just never see, you know, I'm like, oh, look, okay. But that's, you know, then I go to a health center whenever I need to, and I do have to pay
exactly
for it, but very small amounts. So
exactly, you see your taxes are working.
Yes,
for you. Yeah, yeah, that's one of the key differences. So, what's the biggest lesson that you've learned about stepping outside of your comfort zone?
That it's worth it, even when it's very difficult. And at times I can't see the other side of whatever comfort, that level that's been kind of breached, you know, maybe that barrier. Like I'll give you, for instance, Icelandic. So I'm currently in the Westfjords because I'm taking an intense 3-week Icelandic course. I've been learning Icelandic for a little while now. And I just felt like I really needed to break out of my habit of not speaking enough, because that is, it's pretty difficult to do when you're trying to conjugate and the grammar is very complex. So it's been a struggle. And I know many other people who've had a very similar struggle where you just, you get really, really excited about it. And you're doing it. And then you feel defeated. And then you're just like, screw this language. Why am I doing this? Like, everyone speaks English anyway. Right. And so you start to, make yourself believe that it's no problem, and then you kind of go back into this cycle. And even though it's been a struggle, it's been one of the most profound experiences of my life, because I'm learning so much about my own habits when it comes to something that's difficult, which is interesting because my life in Iceland has not been difficult. So that part is like the only thing that's been the annoying thing to me is the language, right? So it's like, why am I just not like doing this the way I should? And it's like, this is shining a light on something I am improving upon, but also teaching me that this, not everything that you work hard for comes to you immediately, right? Like,
oh girl, right?
Best is not guaranteed. So like, yeah, that has been so, it's awesome when I can let myself reflect on it, but in the moment it just sucks, just to be honest.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's good that you're taking the opportunity to actually learn and attempt to immerse yourself in the language, which is more than you could say for most Americans. So what advice do you have for Black women that are thinking of taking the leap and joining this Black Broads Abroad community?
Yeah, I definitely think it's worth it. I also think it's very important to understand about the culture that you're planning to move and integrate into. Because I know of a person who moved here, for instance, and she'd never visited before. And I thought that was pretty intense. I mean, granted, she still liked it, but that's a big gamble if you've just never been here or been to anywhere or have an understanding about the place and you just throw yourself in there. Now, some people might thrive off of that, but I think the majority of people, it would be helpful for them to have an understanding of some cultural expectations. For instance, Icelandic people are not necessarily that open.
Friendly.
Well, they can be friendly, but they're just not like going to make lifelong friends with foreigners ordinarily. Like, that's not like their thing. Like, they're very close-knit groups of friends that they've known sometimes since they were in kindergarten. So they'll be friendly, but they might not form a deep relationship with you. It can happen, and obviously it does happen, but it's happened so much more rarely than maybe in New York, where it's like, I've been a New Yorker my whole life, someone moves from out of the country and I meet them, and then we're really cool. Like, I don't have to be friends with the people I went to elementary school with. You know, the community's not that small. We have so much variety and openness to everybody. And everyone who like comes to New York City, you become a New Yorker. Whereas like coming to Iceland, you're not automatically an Icelander. So these are some places are more open to it than others. So just have a good understanding of that, you know, and be open to the fact that like there might be some things that really gel well with you. And if you can live with the things that are not as pleasant, then that's fine. But if it's really going to rub you the wrong way that the natives aren't the way that you were hoping for or would need in order to thrive, or you can't find a group, you know, to thrive with, then that you need to know that. You need to be prepared for that and think about some
problems. That's good advice.
Thank you.
So my last question is, what is next for Jules, and where can people keep up with your journey on social media?
Yes, I am on Instagram, definitely. I'm very active there. I'm very active on YouTube, on Facebook. I'm posting things, you know, sometimes, but definitely Instagram and YouTube. In terms of what's next for me, I am really trying to take my All Things Iceland podcast and All Things Iceland YouTube channel to the next level, like just to give a lot more interesting content regarding life here. So I've been putting out some things regarding my experience. And now I'm just like going to be talking about my working experience, how to move to this country. So it's going to be specifically geared towards people from the United States, but there are other people that might find it useful too. So that type of content's coming out. And then I'm also doing exclusive content on Patreon if people will want to kind of be involved in that type of more fun, interesting content that I'm not doing on any other channel. I mean, it's not necessarily more fun, but it's just as fun there. But I can be a lot more personal on that channel, just because I'm not really looking to put all, you know, like business out sometimes on YouTube when the trolls come out of nowhere. It's just like, no.
Oh, girl.
Yeah. So, yeah, those are the places, and lots of fun things that are just happening. And I'm always interested in hearing if people are like, if they have questions. I'm open to giving as much advice as I can. I mean, within reason, of course. There are certain resources that, you know, you kind of have to pursue on your own, just because your situation might be different than mine. But overall, I really enjoy connecting with people. And that's, for me, what this is all about.
And could you give your Instagram handle? Did you do it? If you didn't, do it one more time.
Yeah, no problem. I'm All Things Iceland on Instagram, All Things Iceland on YouTube, All Things Iceland on Facebook.
Thank you so much, Jules. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you as well. And I'm very honored to be on your podcast. I appreciate it that you invited me.
Thank you. Shout out to our Patreon members for your support. If you too are interested in joining the Black Broads Abroad movement, you can follow us on social media, and that's BlackBroads. That's on Instagram and Facebook. And if you'd like to become a supporter on Patreon, you can do so on patreon.com/blackbroadsabroad.